Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome back to our watch club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3. I hate clones. Welcome back to Watch Club. My name is CTO831, but you can call me Hugs. And this is our Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 13. If you're joining us for the first time, well, this is Watch Club, our weekly review series, kind of like a book club, but way better. Keep in mind, we will be going into full spoilers for this series and Star Wars in general, so if you haven't watched this week's episode yet, be sure to do so, and then come right back in less than 12 parsecs. Now, before we all have to dress up in uniforms that are, let's be honest, beneath us, let me introduce you to our experimental crew of ragtag troopers. First up, he's taller than a Jawa, smaller than Jabba, and just as entertaining as Jar Jar, he's CT1231, also known as Edit.
Hello, how are ya?
Good, how are you editing? You've been editing lately?
Oh, I've been doing a lot of editing. It's my job, so it's been a lot of editing on the last few days.
Job. Yeah. Right behind him in the lineup, we are Sarglad, to have a true friend and war hero joining us yet again, and her name is CT0118, but you can call her Brushstroke.
Hiya.
Hiya. Just doing everything you can not to think about T-Swizzle.
Don't mention it.
Listen, by the time this episode comes out, your future Brushstroke, you're in a world where you're
I'm in a whole new world. Yeah.
Whole new world. It's going to be so exciting. But listen, dropping down from way up high, he's the dopest, dankest dude on Dagobah. He's CT1006, but you can call him Joints.
Hoi hoi.
Had a little trouble with that one.
Apparently.
I don't know what happened.
You said it three times already and you were just fine. And then mine, you're like,
you know what? I think I've been doing too many puzzles. Little kids are doing puzzles in this episode. You know what I mean? And my brain's all scrambled. Megan, you were.
I get it. My brain is so scrambled right now.
Well, the Taylor Swift puzzles that are going on. I remember we watched this episode and I was telling you, Omega, when she lays out the little circle, that's Taylor
it's
Swift
basically,
fans every time she tweets.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you guys any good at puzzles, though? Like, in general? Like, consider yourself puzzle people?
Well, my grandparents growing up, for some reason, they always got me puzzle books and those, like, little puzzles you had to try and take apart in some unique way. So I've dabbled with that a long time, and I still do it. This year, my brother and his fiance got me a little free the euro puzzle where I had to get a euro out and then put it back in, and now it's gone around my family and we've all done it a couple times. We like a good puzzle in this house, I think.
Nice. Who gets the euro then at the end?
It's forever whoever just breaks it, basically. Oh. You can't put it back together once you break it, so
then you get to keep the euro, and that's a good deal. Justin, what about yourself? Are you a puzzle guy?
I like puzzle games for sure. They can definitely stump me. I'm definitely not attuned to all of the virtues that make up a great puzzle king, if you will. But I do enjoy a good puzzle, and I guess the best form of puzzles is usually in video games, and I enjoy those.
I was gonna say, like, for video games, like, I know we've got a bunch of we're all Zelda people, and I know for myself, like I'm just the worst when it comes to that stuff. Like, I think in if I'm in an escape room, I'm the task guy. Like, I'm the wrecker of the group. Like, go do this one thing and do it very well, and that's what I can do. But like, when I'm playing Zelda, like, there's like, somebody will come up to me and be like, dude, how did you not see the little orange circle in the top left corner of the screen on that mountain super far away? I'm like, bro, I don't know. I have no idea. Megan, you're good at puzzles, though,
right? I mean, yeah, I'm a big puzzle person. That's one of my favorite parts of gameplay. I love solving things. I also used to do a lot of, word games when I was younger. So it'd be, a picture of something, or it was, a word in between a word, and there was some kind of, saying that came out of it. I also love, puzzles
like a
cardboard
puzzle.
Like a jigsaw on a piece puzzle? Of yeah on a table great rainy day at a cottage kind of a game.
Best place to do them.
Yep.
I always would get upset though that like, okay, now we got to take it apart or something. You know what I mean? I'm like, can we glue it? I know that's like what professional
puzzle glue. Oh yeah, people have puzzle glue and stuff like that.
Right. Puzzle glue. Okay, I got to get me some.
I think
puzzle
I have
glue,
like a Hogwarts Express puzzle on a canvas somewhere.
Ooh. Okay.
It's nice.
Well, listen, before we stand out like overheated Gamorreans, let's get into this week's episode. We start this week's episode back on Mount Tantus again with some fantastic eerie synth music. Kyners are just killing it again. Where we see Omega waking up in her cell. She observes her surroundings closely to see the scientists all around them, watching them, as well as the only exit from within the circular room that her and the other kids are locked in. She introduces herself to Eva and tells her she likes her doll, and she asks if they're always watching, and Jax walks over with Sammy and Bairn and tells her the droids are always watching. And after another attempt to talk, Sammy says they don't like it when we talk to each other, and Jax chimes in saying, if you cause problems, things only get worse, as we saw with him in a previous episode when he tried to escape. So, folks, what did you think of this opening? And you know, we just talked about the puzzles that we are either good or suck at. Why do you think they have them playing these games?
Well, I think as we were talking about, puzzles are a very mentally challenging test, if you will, to see how you know you will handle things, how you respond to things. So, you know, obviously they're testing them for some reason. And I think that, you know, the fact that they're having them do games and stuff like that, I think that's just to adhere to the idea that they're kids. And, you know, try to make it far more enjoyable and less like they're being, you know, researched and investigated, if you will, to a certain degree. So,
right.
I think it's very fitting that, you know, a lab would have a series of puzzles as tests to... I guess, see how I think that, you know, how skilled they are in certain elements.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we've seen this in movies before when kids are science projects for mad scientists or whatever. They always are in a blank slate room with some sort of activity
Stranger
in
things.
Front of them. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's very common theme when kids are being tested on, right?
Is the word aptitude test that I'm thinking
of? Oh, like, that sounds sort of, about right.
Yeah, it feels like these puzzles are meant to be some sort of aptitude test, right? For the subjects. So it was cool to see a little bit more of what they look like, and granted, we don't know what they're actually testing them for, though.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting that Omega didn't comment much on the doll, because I'm sure she knows it's hers, but is that kind of like the whole point, that she just is like, oh.
Well, I think she recognizes in that moment, especially given the fact that I think Dr. Carr is what Emery's called. Mm-hmm. She, you know, she says Dr. Carr gave it to me. I think she recognizes that it's a security for this little girl, as much as it was a security for her. So she's not going to try to strip that away from her and
no,
say, "Hey, that
course.
Was mine first." But like, I like that she didn't say. I like that she didn't say anything about it, other than that she liked her, like her little doll.
Yeah,
it just goes to show the sense of empathy that and care that Omega has.
Yeah, I think she's kind of, you know, even in this small amount of time since she's been at Tantus, she's grown up, right? She's constantly growing. I thought that the games could maybe be something related to, like, furthering the Empire in some way, like kind of like Narkeena 5, like in Andor. Like,
oh,
not
yeah.
to go to that dark of a place, but I kind of felt like maybe they were kind of doing something, like they were building something, or they're putting something together on a, like, subconsciously for the Empire.
It's almost like they're trying to do like some sort of like coding or whatever hidden within the puzzles or something along those lines. I kind of saw the puzzles as like just a way to kind of instill that force sensitivity, just trying to solve problems and kind of that lateral thinking, or trying to just do stuff like that. You kind of see similar stuff replicated in the Padawan training in the temple.
Oh,
but this
true.
Is just more an Empire approach where it is, true. Again, like you said, Justin, very lab, very sterile, and they're just trying to get results from these kids. What I thought was interesting is... just again, how Omega didn't really react other than the fact that she said it, like she noticed it was her doll, but didn't, it kind of shows how much she's grown. And what my biggest issue with this series is the lack of time frame. And that's just Star Wars across the board. They don't like to tell you how much time has passed. How long was Omega away from Tantus at this point? Like how long passed between her and Crosshair's escape to her subsequent return? Like I need to know these definitive things, because if it's only been a few weeks, she is very, you know, blasé about this whole thing. She's like, I got out once, I can get out again. But if it's been longer and she's had more time to, again, formulate this plan or even talk about what might happen if they go back here, like, I don't know, I just need to know why she's so chill.
Yeah, I think she's, again, I think, I don't know, I just think she grows super quick and she matures really quickly, but I get what you're saying. I think to see Omega so observant in this moment, she looks very Crosshair vibes coming off of her in this moment, sort of like quietly observing. She sees, you know, the exit, she sees how the door opens, and then she immediately snaps back into Omega mode when she talks to Eva. And I thought that was like, just, it's always so lovely to sort of see her jumping back and forth between those, you know, versions of her. I also, you know, last week we mentioned Eva is an Iktokchi, Jax is a Marilyn, and then we thought that the other one could be a Pantoran, and yes, Sammy is a Pantoran, which, if you remember, George Lucas was also a Pantoran back in Revenge of the Sith and Clone Wars.
God, that's funny.
So it's kind of neat to see a Pantoran. And also, shout out to Alden Diaz from Octo Radio for letting me know that the young hamster character is called a Tar Lafar. Which, Justin, I know he was in Solo, and Justin, you were telling me that if I was to be in Star Wars, that I would be Tarlafar.
100%. Those are 100%. Your people.
I could totally see that.
I appreciate
the furry beard and the sort of stocky nature, for sure.
I love it. Yeah.
That's honestly, it's such a...
That or compliment. A hobbit, so one of the two.
I'll take Tarlafar. I don't want furry feet, but I guess I'd have furry feet regardless. Anyways.
all you'd be covered in hair, like you already are.
It wouldn't be out of place.
Bushy.
I again, the bwomps, you know, Darcy, we talked about the bwomps last week. We got that amazing Tantus music back again. I just love the vibes. Every time they dip into like the Blade Runner sounding stuff is so good.
Cyberpunky. Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of, like, I think this episode, not just because of that music, but a lot of this episode does remind me of Andor, does remind me of Rogue One, especially.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. And then I wanted to just also, before we continue here, I want to shout out the male science tech who's walking with the clone commandos at the beginning of this episode. Bro's got a dope stash, my guy. He looks so good. And I think it's just so cool. Like, shout out to these character designers for really understanding, like, okay, we got to make this guy look 70s. You know what I mean? Like, they're playing into the 70s Empire side of Star Wars. And I just, it was like the first, he's like the first character you see. And I'm like, I like this guy. I like him a lot. But let's keep going here. So back with the batch, we see they've decided to rendezvous with Echo at that abandoned Kaminoan testing facility that we saw in season one. As Rampart whines that he's given them all he knows about Tantus, Hunter reminds him that until they have the exact coordinates, they're not letting him go. Echo arrives in a stolen Imperial shuttle with some supplies, and while they still don't trust him, Rampart explains that they'll have to dock at Station 003 over Coruscant in order to have the coordinates sent directly to their Navi computer. Echo confirms his story, and the batch fill Rampart in on their plan to have him impersonate a captain in order to access the station. Rampart complains that he was a vice admiral and laments that he hates clones as they take off. So, Megan, what did you think of Echo's return and Rampart's whining?
I mean, it's always dope to have a member return. Echo is an honorary but also like deep-seated member of the Bad Batch at this point, even though he's been with
Rex,
thank you. Oh my god, my brain is
you were gonna say Taylor Swift, aren't
yeah
you?
even Bad though Batch Echo's
Taylor's
been
version.
Yeah, oh my god, everyone's stopped listening now at this point. No, even though Wrecker, even though Echo has been with Rex this whole time, It's fun always to have him back with the batch. I also think it's cool, you know, how he like lasers off all of their hand painting of their armor to mm-hmm. kind of like make it look like the OG Bad Batch from, you know, season 7 of Clone Wars, the very first episode of this season, before they had done any sort of like customization to their stuff. And they were still kind of with, it's now the Empire, but at the time, the Republic. So I kind of like that for kind of finishing off this series.
Mm-hmm. They kind of went even further. They went before the Republic, because even when we first saw them, they had the Skull's face painted on their stuff, where like Crosshair had that scope, and they just went complete laser everything off. They're just bare now.
There's something like very interesting about the fact that they stripped themselves of like their war paint. Do you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. the paint that we've kind of come to know them under, right? Like that look, that style has been so defining to who they are as characters. And I think that it's interesting that, you know, they're sort of stripping that and starting raw and like going back to sort of a a new beginning. Maybe it's a sense of clarity or what, but you know, having Echo come back is in this you know, with two episodes left, it's probably by design, because it seems like these last two episodes are probably going to be the final bout on Tantus. And you know, of course, where's Wrecker? Where's Echo? He's going to be with them. So mm-hmm. you know, it also leaves the door open for other clones to potentially show up and help with the charge. You know, Rex. You know, Wolf. We saw this past season. So you know, how do we get those characters back into the fold of helping the batch, because we know it's bound to happen. But yeah, it seems like this was the time to bring back Echo, so that we could start getting towards the end here.
Well, and I think I love a lot of what Dee Bradley Baker does on this show, but I loved the line delivery with Hunter when he says, "You'll get your freedom back when we get the exact coordinates to that base," and he mm-hmm. just like, you know, "You'll get your freedom back." He gets so like he you know, Hunter's usually pretty calm, cool, collected, and you can hear the anger in his voice when he says like the word freedom and things like that. And I think considering what Rampart did to them, it's justified.
Exactly, and I think it's what they're fighting for, right? And that's what they're fighting for, the freedom of those clones, right? So mm-hmm. I think that word and the emphasis on it is purposeful. That's what's driving Hunter and his motives and really pushing for this mission.
I mean, Echo coming back is great and all. I just like how the batch treats Rampart. Like they don't care about him at all. And even his whole line, "I can't wear this," and then just silence. Yeah. It's like, I was a vice admiral, still silence. Like they don't care. Like it's great.
Yeah.
I love how little they care about Rampart, just like I do, because I don't care about Rampart. I hope he does not make it out of this mission, whatever it is.
I don't know. I wonder if he's going to end up helping them.
It'll be kind of like a Rebels situation with one guy.
I was saying last week. Yeah, there's not enough of a connect build-up for a Kallus redemption arc here. He's just a bad guy through and through. Some of the Empire does not need to be redeemed, and Rampart is part of that empire.
Rampart is the Star Wars equivalent of "Can I speak to your manager?" Like, he's not, he's so whiny, and like, part of me has to believe that Echo was probably like, he loved shutting him down in that moment. Like, he just was stoked about that, and I can't blame him.
They take a certain sense of pleasure in this whole thing, right? Because they have a hate for Rampart, and obviously what he did to the clones and Kamino and all that. So it shows.
Yeah. He's not changing. He's not going to change. All right, back on Tantus, Emery is taking Omega's blood sample, and Omega manages to steal a tool off of Emery's medical tray without her noticing. She stares longingly at a section of her cell where the blood sample was measured, and Dr. Scalder judges Emery out loud, and Emery shuts her down by reminding her that she's the head scientist and she'll run the vault as she sees fit. Omega sits with the other kids and starts to ask them questions like, how often do the droids take their vitals? Do the troopers come in the room? And Omega lets them in on a secret. that she's escaped from the mountain before and that she's doing it again and that they're all coming with her. She explains her plan to use the tubes in the wall that transfer their blood samples, but she needs the other kids to cause a distraction long enough for her to explore them. So let's talk about this because I think, you know, the description says it one way, but the real question here is, you know, Megan, did Emery really not notice Omega swiping that tool off of her tray, or do you think she let her get away with it?
I think Emery has a soft spot for these kids. That's why she's going to run it the way she wants to run it. And there's, I mean, I think because they've been there, I mean, the way that she exclaimed, like, this is my sector, I am the lead scientist, I'm going to do it this way, shows that she has the confidence in herself now, whereas when she was introduced, like, it shows sort of that time gap, Darcy, that you were confused about. It's she came in and was like nervous and hesitant about what they were doing, and now because she's stayed as the lead scientist, she's got some kind of control over it. And the hope that at least I have is that she is a good person and does not want to do this to these kids. So she's figuring out how. And the moment Omega came back, she was like, okay, here we go. We're going to secretly work together and no one's going to know except for the fourth wall people.
Well, I mean, my whole thing is, why'd she bring the thing of tools in? All she needs is that little gun. What was the tray for? Yeah. Like we had, every time we've seen them take blood samples, it's so quick and simple. Why do they need extra tools that would just be so conveniently placed for her to turn her back for the right amount of time? It's just like, this is too convenient. Yeah. What are you up to, Dr. Yeah, Carr?
She didn't need, you know, all those tools. All she needed was that Ozempic thing that, like, takes the blood, right? And then she obviously had those tools. I think she's obviously doing it without blatantly saying it, right? Like, she's leaving these things because she knows Omega is smart enough and she's going to think of something. If anyone's going to help these kids, it's not going to be Emery. It's going to be Omega.
No.
And I think that she knows that and she's kind of allowing this to happen. But I just loved in this moment how Omega just quickly snaps into, like, you know, Bad Batch mode, right? And she's just like telling, and like, this is where you get to see that maturity and her growing up. And, you know, it really does show it when she's sitting at a table of children with other children that she's the most adult person there because she's seen shit. You know what I mean? She's gone through stuff. As she says, she's been trained. So it's far different. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right, Darcy, that it'd be great if there was some sort of literal or very obvious, like, this is how much time has passed, or, you know, this is where we're at. I think, though, even just as subtle as it is in her comfort, her confidence, there has been months at least that have passed since her and Crosshair escaped. And the chase to get Omega back to Tantus has probably been, you know, going on for months, right? So I think in a lot of ways, we see how much time has passed with just how confident she is and how she just, again, just snaps into this mode and she's ready to rock. And she's like, guys, don't worry. I got this. Done it before. I'm already scoping it out.
Yeah.
We good. We Gucci. Don't worry.
Well, Megan, I wanted to go back to with Emery's, you know, Justin, you're talking about Omega's confidence growing, Emery's confidence in Omega growing. Because at first I was kind of on the mindset of, like, there's no way she actually knew because, like, she cares too much about Omega. She wouldn't want to put her in danger, but that might be old Emery. And now, rewatching the episode a few times, there is, like, the most split second glance back that Emery does at Omega.
She's like,
so, like,
you got that?
She knows. She knows. She knows what's going on. And I think it's cool to sort of see her trusting Omega more for a situation like this.
Well, and now I'm thinking back to the doll, and maybe that was Omega's indicator. Like, the moment she saw the doll, she was like, "That's Emery, and that's my indicator to tell me it's safe and I'm going to be able to get out again."
That's really cool.
And I like the idea that, you know, again, it was like that sign for Omega that, like, you know, Emery's softened a little. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Things have changed. If she's giving the doll that meant so much to herself, Omega, to me, mm-hmm. you know, and she's giving it to another child. Like, it's it. She's aware. Well, she's cognizant. Yeah. Right.
And she took it from Omega initially, right? At the very first episode, she took it away from her and said, remember, no personal belongings, and then eventually gave it back to her. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
I think it's especially building off last episode when Omega returns and she's, Kara's like, oh, I'm just glad to see her safe again. And Omega's like, am I though? The fact that you said that this little, the drop yeah. almost of the doll is Kara being like, you are safe. We're going to try and get you out of here. Or at least you can try and get out of here and I won't try and stop you this time yeah. type thing. Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't even think about the idea that that could have been a message. Because, I mean, at first she gave it to her as like an apology to Eva, right? But mm-hmm. I do like the idea that it could also be seen that way from Omega. I love seeing Emery shutting down Scalder. Again, more Empire people, you know, getting shut down. And like, just like she's like, I'm the boss, you know, shut up, yeah. batch. And I do think Scalder's going to be a problem for Emery in the next couple episodes.
You can just tell by her cheekbones.
Yeah, very, yeah. very high cheekbones. Yeah,
she's got Tarkin cheekbones. So.
She's got Tarkin cheekbone sure. going on. Yeah, yeah. And then also shout out to these writers for finding another way for Omega to say tubes. I just, how far she's come from not wanting to be an experiment in a tube to now seeking tubes out
as an escape option.
It's like... And then I will say her saying, I like a challenge, to me, you know, and again, I love how we get to see different parts of her. That to me was so Wrecker. That was such Wrecker thing to say. Mm-hmm. And I think it's exciting to see her flex all the skills she's learned from her brothers.
I also want to just call out the visuals that we kind of see leading into these moments with the sort of bird's eye view of Tantis. That sort of
so
cyclical
good.
Oh, circular shape. And then it flat goes into right into the lab. Again, another circle pattern. And then when we see Omega's, obviously she's built a map of the lab. It's also a circle, right? And you know, the shape, the idea of circles and the idea of like the cyclical sign and how things mm-hmm. kind of are repeating and the sort of cycle of it. I think that's very interesting to kind of embed that in this episode and to see how things are kind of repeating themselves to a certain degree, but each time I think it's going to be different, much like these puzzles and how you approach like solving them. Like there are probably different ways to approach that puzzle and solve that. And you know, you could look at a puzzle as sometimes being very definitive, but also very circular, right? Because if you approach it, it's going to get you the same way at place, but it's just about how you go about doing it. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. I outside of that, I don't know if there was any sort of literal sense other than just a visual complementary mm-hmm. sort of element that helps to kind of tie these elements together. But yeah, it was pretty cool. And even just like the bird's eye view, it looked like the machine where they've been dropping in the blood tests and it just ticks like a clock too. So,
Shit. Yeah. That's cool.
So, yeah. Well, yeah. And I think the fact that she started her journey by escaping a cloning testing facility. And she's going to end her journey by escaping a cloning testing facility is cool. But I also think the other way that I kind of saw it too, Justin, the circle is like two halves of a circle, right? And I think both Omega and the Bad Batch are on a secret mission in this episode. And both of them kind of throughout this episode have last second intense moments. So even like the journey or the arc that they're collectively on in this episode is kind of like two halves of a whole. So mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I really dug that that little visual element. Okay, so let's get back to where we were. Back with the Batch Bros, they strip their armor and so that they can attempt to blend in, and they get to the station over Coruscant and begin their mission. Wrecker says, they tell Wrecker to stay with the ship while Hunter, Crosshair, Echo, and Rampart move out. They're immediately met with some trouble when Lieutenant Novitz tells them they aren't on his manifest. Rampart steps in and says they're on a mission that's classified, and if there's an issue, they can take it up with Tarkin.
An issue.
Love my favorite line.
That's how Tarkin would say
if you
it
have
sure.
an issue, I was like, oh my God, bust it out, bro. Let's go.
So he did have an issue because Novitz immediately backs down. And after getting a few looks, they finally make it to the control room where, after stunning an Imperial technician, Echo starts cracking the ship's encryption. Novitz continues to question Wrecker and he knocks him out. letting the batch know that they need to hurry up, and Echo manages to get into the system. He finds a science vessel is set to depart for Tantus, but the only problem is the ship will get its coordinates only after it takes off. So they decide to split up in a plan that will allow them to sneakily attach themselves to the hull of the vessel and hitch a ride directly to Tantus. So we see Rampart being useful for once. Darcy, what did you think of this covert operation that they found themselves in?
I mean, I just got vibes from A New Hope. The Death Star sneaking in, everything like that. I'm like, this is just Death Star over
again. Or Rogue One.
The control room, right? Or Rogue One, yeah.
Any animated Star Wars mission from like Rebels or like Clone Wars.
Good point. Anytime where they going have to into infiltrate. Any Imperial anything. Yeah. They capture that vibe perfectly. Yeah. So it was really fun to get, again, that trademark look of going into an Imperial base. And just, and Rampart actually acts the job of Imperial well because he's an Imperial prick. So that doesn't surprise me.
I absolutely, like, shout out to like the animators for the way they animate Rampart's face. Like, first when he's, you know, schooling this dude and he's like, if you have an issue, right? and it's just like the way they animate like this sort of
he's
like
so sassy
pose and sass to him. Yeah. And then it continues when they get into that control room. There's this great moment where they just like they push Rampart in and they close the door and he's just like, well, what the hell are we going to do now? Like, he has this weird face. And it's like, it's something that, like, you can go missed so easily, like, if you're not really looking at it. And, like, the fact that the animators, like, invested that time into it to just kind of give, like, Rampart, like, this sort of, like, perplexed, like, okay, now we're screwed kind of face. Like, he didn't believe in their plan. I thought that was really cool. It just heightens, it highlights his character and shows a little more about of the sort of, you know, the sass behind him. And also, like, was Wrecker, like, gaming? Like, was he just sitting there like gaming on, like, a phone?
I think he was waiting for the new Taylor Swift album to drop.
He was looking, like, up Easter
on
eggs.
Twitter or something, and he was just, like, he was, like, scrolling, and then someone was like, oh, where's your captain? And he's like, oh, I'm just threw his phone away. He's like, oh, geez, yeah. So I thought that was pretty funny, just to kind of, like, interject, I guess, a moment that felt a little more plausible and real for, like, anyone else who's just gonna sit and wait and, like, maybe play a
relatable
game on their phone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not like he's just gonna stand there, right? Like, he's gotta occupy his mind somehow. But I wanted to, you know, I think seeing Rampart, you know, he's adjusting his badge and he looks all snooty and stuff like that. And
he keeps doing it throughout the thing. Yeah.
He's happy
to be back in that. Yeah,
to be back in that, and it's not gonna last. But no, I think, you know, talking about the little details from the animators, I just like that even the whitest of traditional stormtroopers, the ones that get their shift off early, I like that they even have, like, a little Tantus insignia on their helmets. Mm-hmm. And, like, one side of you looks at it as, like, a you know, they're really paying attention to this stuff, and the other side is kind of like, oh, they're, you know, to sell more stormtrooper toys, they have to put a little triangle on the top.
Sure.
But I just thought it was, it's nice to see those
branding
little details. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think you think that because you're going to buy it.
Oh, yeah. He's already bought it.
I already pre-ordered it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In his cart, shipping tomorrow.
Yeah, just the detail about that, I didn't even notice it or think of it that being that important. But when you look or compare it to the fact that the Batch stripped their armor of their colors and stuff like that, that the Republic allowed. You look at all the different legions of clones and stuff like that, and they were all able to make themselves individual and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas even these Imperial stormtroopers, the only designation that they are different than your average stormtrooper are two little triangles on the corner of the helmet.
Yeah.
So small and insignificant. It just really...
Because they're small and insignificant, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It just shows what the Empire thinks of these troops anymore. They're not people anymore. They're just numbers. So
they're objects. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I thought, like, the little triangular symbols is more of a signifier of, like, sort of a branding, right? Like, you know, they are part of this unit. And
they're the
Tantus so
group,
Exactly, and, like, they know, oh, you have the symbol, okay, well, you must be, you know, hoity-tighty up and, you know, very similar to how, you know, Rampart's just playing with his badge, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, Nate, he's super excited. Even he has that line where he's like, oh, I did miss this, right? Like, being able to just chew someone out that's below him. Like,
just pull rank on someone. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if, like, is he going to make it? Like, there's no way they let him go.
He's going to run and get killed as he's trying to run away.
I don't think he'll die. I think he'll get captured again.
Or that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Or he might he might, I don't know. I don't think he's
run off into the sunset.
Well, I don't know. Something's going to happen to him, but I don't know. He can either turn on them, right? So when they get to Tantus, he turns on them.
Yeah.
Or, and probably he sees it as a benefit to himself. If he turns on them, then maybe they won't send him back and he won't be imprisoned and so on and so forth. He saved Tantus. So he's kind of, you know, saving his own skin. I see that could potentially happening. I don't know if you kill him, right? Like, I don't know if like, again, like, I don't think the last two episodes are just going to be riddled with people dying, right?
You know, I also don't think he's important enough to die, to be
exactly.
honest.
And I don't think he's important enough to carry on. Like, who knows? Mm-hmm. They might just push him out of the ship and be like, yeah, you know, we're on our way. Bye. You know what I mean? So
that'd be hilarious.
Airlock him? That'd be awesome.
This is for Kamino.
Oh, that'd be dope.
You see him, his little body like fly out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Changes like the mood of the Bad Batch for the last two episodes. They're just over.
It becomes 300 and they just like kick him out. This is Kamino. Oh, man. All right. Back at the vault, Omega is ready to go, but Scalder notices the kids are kind of looking at each other weirdly. Decides to investigate. Omega manages to take off a couple panels to get a look inside, but knocks off another one when she looks back. And luckily, as soon as Scalder arrives, Omega has managed to fix the panels and is sitting there calmly. Megan, Omega's gotten better at lying, I guess, somehow, since the last time we saw her try to lie in front of Ventress and fail horribly. you know, were you expecting she'd get caught, or were you thinking like she's fine?
No, of course she's not going to get caught. I think she's, every single time we see her do something like this, she learns from previous mistakes. So it's just kind of like noticing, checking it out, closing it back up and sitting down. There wasn't meant to be the escape right in that moment. It was like, no, I'm just gonna feel around, see what is available to me, and then close it back up. And yeah, no, she wasn't gonna get caught.
Yeah, again, she's showing her she's showing the way she's learned from the batches and from her time with them and the missions that they've done. You know, you observe, you calculate, you formulate, right? You don't just jump to action, right? You have to build up a plan and you know, you kind of go with it. And, you know, yep. I think that's what she's doing. I think, though, that whoever designed this facility and who's designed most of the Empire stuff that always has some sort of flaw, they need to be fired. Like, they yes. literally need to be fired. Like, why are these
that
walls
is my whole
like,
issue
hollow?
With this.
Like, why yeah. are these walls hollow?
How can I say she can take it apart with one little tool and then
and
no
then
more.
Suddenly just, she's removing like six or seven
it
panels?
It falls
like,
apart?
And, what yeah, sort of and, prison is this, right?
How like, does I'm sorry. How does that open up for the little tube thing to come out? Because I don't right. see any mechanisms attached to these panels, but now I'm supposed to believe they move.
So
I
they're
just,
basically
yeah, that,
in. Mm. They're basically encased in like some room that's sort of like an elevator because there's shafts that yeah. are surrounding mm-hmm. it, and it's obviously easily they I guess they're just waiting for someone to actually try and be like, oh yeah, I guess
I
we should
just do this.
Yeah, exactly,
that
right?
That is like, a weak point. You're right. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Tantus Base has the same designer as the person who designed the
Death Star. Exactly. They need to be fired.
The Cadbury chocolate, like.
Oh my god.
Like they're just coming apart in these little squares.
Mr. Cadbury.
Yeah. Mr. Cadbury. He's the one to blame. I got major Prison Break vibes. I don't know if anyone here has seen Prison Break, but I was like, is Omega gonna get like a circle on
the
on her
map
tattoo
on her
back?
Back?
Like, let's go! Like, it'd be pretty dope. But yeah, okay.
Like a tramp stamp?
What is it? Bro, watch Prison Break. Jeez. Okay. So then we get back with the brothers, and Echo manages to sneak through a droid loading tube, avoiding detection.
Tube.
Hunter takes off towards the science vessel, but Echo hasn't deactivated the ship's sensors yet. The Imperials pick up on Echo's activity, and they send a trooper down to look into it. Echo stuns the trooper and gives the all clear to the bridge using the trooper's comms, and he manages to disable the proximity sensors at the very last second. Mm-hmm. Hunter attaches their shuttle, and they all make the jump to light speed on their way to Tantus, which ends
so
the episode,
good.
Brings us to what's going to happen. Batch, Justin, I want to know, what did you think of this ending? You know, what do you think Omega's going to find on the other side of those tubes?
Hopefully salvation, and maybe more information about what's going on. You know?
Right.
This was another episode that felt very like just mid
setup.
Setup. I guess is the only way you could really describe it. So. Mm-hmm. Mid is probably just more my general feeling of the episode, but yeah. The ending was really, really good. It kind of matched the same sort of level of tension when Crosshair and Omega made this plan to like kind of tag the ship and trace it. And then you were like, oh my God, is he going to get it? Is he going to get it? And he didn't. And that was like so defeating in that moment. And I was like, oh buddy, they got to get it, right? Like they have to get it this time, right?
This is the last shot they had.
And this is their last shot, and they had to, and they obviously did. And but that tension, the way they were cutting it back and forth and, you know, showing the screen, and like, you know, Echo gets, you know, confronted by stormtroopers, and, you know, he has to deke them out. And it was just, it was really well edited to kind of drive that tension of like, what are they going to make it? Are they going to actually succeed? So, you know, that's where the episode really actually felt like a lot of fun in a lot of ways, is towards the end here. And as soon as they clasp and it's like, when they blast off, I was like,
so good.
Okay, end the episode now. Perfect. I'm ready for the next little bit. But yeah, for this last little chunk was probably the highlight for me from this episode the most.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even watching it a second time, that tension is just as palpable. Like, I know where they're getting away, but still, they're cutting it close.
Cut it close.
I also love, like, one of my favorite lines from it too is Rampart's freaking out, and he's like, "Oh, are they gonna get caught? This isn't gonna work. This is gonna work." And Crosshair just turns to me, he's like, "Don't worry, Echo's got it." And it's just like, oh yeah, that's the confidence that you love to see in the batch. They trust each other. This is great. Yeah,
they're back.
Love this exit.
It's so nice, and I think it's near the beginning of the episode, but it's so nice to see Crosshair truly, like, back a part of the group with his little toothpick in his mouth at the beginning of the episode. I was like, oh, it's Crosshair. I love it.
And I think in terms of what's going to happen, Batch, I do think that there's more than just these kids as assets. I think there are other assets outside of the vault. Even in the vault, there's, like, an extra, like, there's another cell. So, like, that's just, like, they're planning ahead, like, maybe they're planning to get more assets in the future.
Yeah.
But I just feel like whatever Omega does see, like, I don't think she's going to like it. I think it's going to be.
But do you think that there's, like, it's, like, the Lost? It's, like, the other side of the island?
Well, like, what? Yeah, just another bunch of, like, another Omega shows up.
And she's like, I would
hate
that.
What are you doing here? And, like, yeah, you're trying to, like, get each other to it? That would be nuts.
And I like the idea that, again, there's maybe another layer to this vault that we haven't seen. Because, again, it looked like very much like an elevator shaft, like you said, Justin. Mm. And it's like, what's to say that they won't have some Jedi in captivity down there?
Yeah, I was just going to say, in a previous episode, when Palpatine came and looked at something, for sure he wasn't looking at the cell with those kids in it.
No.
So
right. There's two parts to this facility. And we were talking about this on another episode, Nate. You know, what we're seeing here is like a testing facility, which is deemed as the vault, I guess. But there's also an area where Palpatine, as you mentioned, Megan, Palpatine goes to visit, and he's looking at something that is obviously small enough to fit into a small tube. and is encased in some sort of, looks like some sort of protection, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know what that is yet. And hopefully we do get that answer. I'm imagining we will, and probably the finale at this point, at the way we're going. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's another side to this facility that we've been sort of introduced to, but we haven't fully explored. And the two are probably going to run parallel. I think the kids here are influencing, they have probably DNA with M counts that with Omega's M count would probably allow for a sustainable clone of a force user or a force wielder. That's my theory. I think that they're all sort of filling in the code of the cloning formula, if you will.
The most M count rich source.
Because we're exploring the science behind, you know, Project Necromancer. This is the early beginnings of it. And I think, you know, deriving it from, you know, the Kamino science and obviously all that, that's what this is. Like, even Jennifer said, cloning has been in my interview, is that, like, cloning has been so essential to this story because it's almost its own, like Tantus is its own character, but cloning in itself is its own political sort of motif to this show.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you basically summed it all up there, but the fact that Project Necromancer can't be about just testing M counts, it's obviously about bringing some kind of body back to life, so it's got to be the best host body that they think they've found, and then putting all of these genetic M count mutations, whatever, into this one body to make like almost like a super soldier of Star Wars.
Yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's exactly it. I think they want to find a way to like. It might not even just to be preserving the life of the Emperor. It could also be preserving the life of Darth Vader, like Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, and we talked about the idea of what are those troopers called in Mandalorian. The robot, the droid troopers, the shadow, I can't remember exactly
shadow
what
troopers
called.
Or death troopers. No,
death troopers are, anyways.
People.
There's those those troopers that are like part droid in Mandalorian that drop
season
down
two?
And attack. Yeah, they attack Grogu and Mando in that one moment. And I almost wondered if this was something connected to that because we do see those cloning facilities in and around that part of that season as well. And I feel like it's all obviously very connected. So I'm almost wondering if maybe the shadow assassin trooper that we have is a like a beta test for something.
But I
like
was,
that.
Yeah, I always thought those troopers were. Droid base.
They are in Mando. They are full on droids. They are the Dark Troopers.
Dark troopers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So and like I think obviously as an Empire would, they have multi level science program where so many different things are being researched and developed and you know in secrecy to better the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we saw with the Dark Troopers is a avenue of that, right? On top of everything else. I don't know if necessarily the science may infuse, but like the idea that they're researching and they're developing new methods of things, I think that's an example of what a Shadow Trooper kind of symbolizes in a lot of ways.
And Tantus is a giant mountain. There's no way the only thing they're worried about right now is that one project, right?
And the Empire at this is all about trying to amass more power to keep the hole in the galaxy. And so they were very much fractured. And that's why, like at this point, we already have people collecting resources for the Death Star. Like the Death Star began its initial buildings when it was still the Republic because Palpatine's just that good. Mm-hmm. And then we look at other things with like the Dark Trooper was probably a different faction with Moff Gideon running it on some other planet. So I wouldn't be surprised if Tantus is only the tip of the iceberg of this cloning thing, but this is maybe where it all starts for that Project Necromancer where we see the remnants of that in Mando.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because didn't the, I can't remember his name right now, but we watched a whole episode of Mando where that guy talked about cloning and Dr. Pershing, right? We'd watched an entire episode about Dr. Pershing.
Yeah, I think we don't fully obviously understand the full gamut or scope of Project Necromancer, but you know, I've mentioned this on the podcast numerous times, but I think there's two sides to it, science and dark magic, which we'll obviously get with the Dathomirians down the road, and potentially that is why we have a resurrected Palpatine is from Dathomirian magic. He's not actually a physical clone, whereas the science obviously gave us something like Snoke and Rey and other elements that we've seen. So to understand how this has been a running thread through three different sagas of stories, I think is sort of what they're trying to do here in this first in the Bad Batch, is to kind of show how it was established here, how it was beginning here, and it was never something that was just going to be let go. You know, they didn't just roll over and say, oh, well, clones are done. Now we're just going to switch over to Stormtroopers. There's a reason why they wanted to silence the talk around clones and contain it and control it for their own purpose. And that's what the Empire's done now successfully. And, Tantus is the safe space. It's the Kamino 2, if you will.
Kamino 2. That's what they should have called it. I wanted to ask, because we're getting close to the end, and a lot of people online are doing the speculation train on whether or not this series is going to end on a happy note. So, we've got two episodes left. I wanted to ask each of you, Do you think that this show is going to end on a happy note or a sad note? Darcy, what do you think?
I think it's going to be a bittersweet note. Like, I think our batch is going to get out there all right and stuff like that. But by that point, the Empire will already have got what it needs. And they're going to just go on to become this greater threat in the next story, or just what we know them to become by the time we get to, you know, Rebels and the original trilogy. So, again, I don't think, like, I think the batch will get out there fine. Maybe we'll see one loss. I don't want to, because they
Tech
all
was
deserve
hard
a happy ending.
Yeah.
We lost Tech. That's all we need to lose. No more, please.
And mm-hmm. I had heart palpitations when Wrecker got blown off of the side of the ship. And I was like, yes. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I don't need... So don't take any badge from me. I think the Empire will come out on top by the end of this series.
Yeah. I think it's going to be bittersweet. I agree with you, Darcy. I think there's also going to be a like proper and meaningful separation of Omega and the brothers. I don't think that they're going to be together forever. Mm. I truly think that Omega's going to head towards the rebellion, to, you know, the fulcrums of the universe. I think she's going to end up that way. Again, I still really hope that we are reintroduced to some characters that we know and love from the Rebels series before this show is over, because we have had her interact with Hera, and the boys have interacted with Kanan as a kid. So I would love for them to reunite, and maybe she ends up moving that direction, and that'll be really sad to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but no deaths.
Yeah, no, I don't think deaths. I think, yeah, like you guys are saying, bittersweet. I think it's also going to be very ambiguous too. Like, I like the idea that they have to split up for her safety. They have to split up. And I think that that's very much what it's going to come down to. They've spent so much time throughout all of these seasons to get Omega, protect Omega. And I think they're going to start to realize the best way to protect her is just to let her go. And you know, let her be her own thing. And I think that's part of being a parent. That's part of being a dad. You have to, you know, you have to understand the idea of when you're
Justin's going all Bluey writer on us right now.
you have to understand like the complexities of when you've taught your kid enough that they can start to do this stuff without you having to protect them. You know, it's a different, you know, you go from parenting to mentoring, and I think that is the ending that this show deserves, and I think it's taking us to. Yeah, no deaths for sure. I also think though that we could see more stories explored. Like I don't think that this is a certified end to the Bad Batch and Omega. Who knows what that looks like in future, right? Like if they do end up dividing and splitting up, there's more stories to tell there. Right. And it could be an Omega centric story where she, you know, does meet Hera and, you know, she does interact with these things and, you know, she becomes, you know, another person as part of the rebellion. Like there's just so much potential with telling the stories that I don't think it ends in the Bad Batch, this story. I just think that this chapter, this segment, this portion of the story is concluding here. So, yeah.
And I think it's really interesting, the idea of seeing an Omega completely on her own, right? Like we've been talking about all these episodes, every time we bring up that she's using one of her brother's skills, right? And so to sort of see her growing into her own person and what have you, yeah, I don't have a better answer than that, Justin. I think that's a good one. I think I do think it'll be bittersweet. I do think that Emery will die.
I think Emery's going to die. I think if it's not going to be any of our core characters, but even that might be so much of a catalyst and a push for Hunter to realize, you know, how important Omega is and how she needs to be safe, mm-hmm. but also for Omega and like the fight that would continue beyond the story. Right. If she does, yeah. I agree. I think I would love to see her sort of be on the early fronts of the rebellion. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Be pretty mm-hmm. dope. All right, well, let's get to our final thoughts for this episode and our rating on a scale out of 5 Imperial Captain Impersonators. And Darcy, we'll start with yourself.
Well, to me, this is a great, you know, setup for the end of the series. It feels like it's really laying the foundation for what's to come next. While I did find the pacing a bit off at the beginning, the jump back and forth was just like, no, spend more time with those characters. The end of the episode was worth it enough. Just again, that the tension you get from them latching onto that ship as right before it takes off is just it. No matter how many times I watch it, I'm sure I'll feel that same amount of like edge of my seat. Will they make it? Even if I know the outcome. So yeah, this episode does a great job of, again, laying the foundation for what's to come in the finale. And for that, I'm going to give this one 4.5 out of 5. Impersonating Imperial captains?
Close enough.
Like that?
Perfect.
Listen, you're going to get caught if you keep talking like that.
I would not last long in a mission like that. I can tell you that much right
You'd
now.
You'd be like, my captain is captaining. brushstroke, go ahead.
I enjoyed this episode. It was really fun to see Omega kind of take on this leadership role with the kids in that room, to see her, you know, like put her elbows on the table and put her fingers together and act like this, you know, seasoned
big wig.
Yeah. it was so fun to see her like that. And I'm really excited to see where the story goes. And I'm so glad that at least in the final two episodes, we have the Bad Batch on Tantus, and we're going to get an incredible conclusion. And again, we've said it a million times in this episode, but the ending was the climax that we needed. So I'm going to go with a 4 out of 5 Imperial Captain Impersonators.
All righty. Okay, you passed the test. edit.
I know I wouldn't.
Yeah, I as I was mentioning before, I think this episode's very mid. It has some good parts to it, but for the most part, it just, you know, coming off of last week's episode, which was also very mid, it was just such a filler episode. You know, I'm just expecting things to amp up as we're, you know, three episodes. What is it?
Two episodes left.
We're only 2 episodes left. Okay, so this was the third last episode, you know, and last week was the fourth last. And I just was hoping for us to be moving the needle a little bit more, and not doing so much of a setup. So I'm really hoping the final two episodes deliver. But yeah, the last week's episode was definitely like a 3 out of 5. And I feel like this one, just because of some of the moments, there was like, you know, obviously the stuff with Omega, really great to see her confident and in control and understanding the situation, being the one to tell the kids, don't worry, I got this. And then also that really tense moment towards the end of like, are they going to latch on? Are they going to do it? This is their last chance. Are they going to make it? And they do. And yeah, that really does hit. So I'm going to be giving this one a 3.5 out of 5. Impersonating Captain Imperial Captain.
You're going to get shoved out of a tube, bro.
Shoot me at the spot. I mean, yeah, exactly.
We're shooting you out of the tube into space. I kind of am leaning more with Justin on this one. I think this episode was definitely better than last week's. But it just, to me, it felt like it's still not enough payoff. Having Echo back, obviously there was no way they were going to end this series without him. The music is excellent. The banter between the Batches and Rampart was fun again this week. And it, you know, it was nice to see him make himself useful, but like, I don't know. I guess I wanted a juicier element that we could all really dig into and chat about. And it kind of just felt like more of what we've been getting in these sort of lead up episodes. And I just kind of thought we were past that by this point. But no, the ending was fantastic. Kudos to them for that, obviously. And like, there's some really lovely, you know, there's lovely artistic elements and things that we can read into. But that's like every episode. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's one of the standout things about this series is the attention to detail that these creators and these writers and these animators and the people that designed the layout of Tantus and the way they, you know, do that amazing match cut like we talked about. Like, we see that even in the episodes that are on the lower side. So for that reason, I kind of am expecting a little bit more out of the other side of this episode. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 Imperial Captain Impersonators. See, I'm cheating because I've got it written down in front of me, so I can just easily.
I also read it, so.
But yeah, let's get to that payoff. Let's get to that those final moments. And I'm excited. I'm still very excited, to say the least. But I feel like these kind of episodes shouldn't be at the tail end of your season. They should be you know, maybe at the beginning.
Yeah, for sure. Or just further in, yeah. Right? Like, I totally agree. Like, the you know, invasion of Pabu and, you know, that could have been closer towards the end here, and it could have really amped up the finale and the task of getting her back. And that's what it felt like, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when the whole moment of Pabu happened, and, you know, Crosshair feels like, oh, we failed her, and so on and so forth. Like, there's such a drive, and then we have like these two episodes that kind of slow the pacing down a little bit, and then now these next two episodes are meant to kind of pick it up. And I don't know, I'm really hoping they can deliver.
Yeah,
maybe we'll look back on the whole season and go, no, that's exactly how that needed to go.
Like, when we do these watch clubs, it is hard to, like, there are good episodes and bad episodes, yeah. Right? And there's things that move the needle forward, and there's things that don't. And that's, you know, it's almost harder to kind of grade an episode based on the idea of where it fits into the overall season. Because when you look back at a season, you're going to think about, you know, how those episodes really
work together.
Did they matter? Yeah. And did they work together to get us to this? But, you know, again, touting this is the finale, this is the end of the story. You know, there's questions that are still on the table. It just feels like we should be at a point where we should be getting a little more answers than just kind of like stalling.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And again, I think just really quickly, just going back to what I was saying, like, even a bad episode of The Bad Batch is still a good episode. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think we've ever given any Bad Batch episode
lower than a 3. I don't think so. Yeah. Maybe that one with the bugs that one time. I don't know.
Yeah. But.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the one with Fee.
Just like, all the ones.
Oh, yeah.
But all right, that is it for this week's episode of Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts or your predictions on the shows we cover in Watch Club, well, you don't have to sneak past all your doctors to try and find out where some tubes go. Instead, Darcy, can you let the big beautiful batches know where they can reach us by holo message?
Sure, they can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or if that's too much, I can't think of anything right now.
Like getting your tubes.
And I'm not even thinking about
getting your tubes tied.
I'm thinking about stuff right now. My head's all fried. They can reach us on Instagram @wearegeekcentric or on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it @geekcentricyt.
Also, feel free to join our Discord using the link in the description so we can keep the conversation going on about this series. We'd love to know what you think. How's it going to end? You know, is tech actually dead? I hope so. We'll see. But we also are talking about other series like X-Men 97, which Megan
so good
just got on board with.
Just watched all of them.
We also are talking about Fallout as well, which is such a phenomenal series, and Invincible. We are, you know, as that season 2 has wrapped. So keep in mind, we have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows, including our recent spoiler-free reviews for Prime Video's Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, Monkey Man, Three Body Problem, X-Men 97, Invincible Season 2 Part 2, and Dune Part 2. We also have some great interviews out now, like our most recent interview with the executive producer of the Apple original series Sugar. Justin had the chance to talk to Simon Kinberg, and he talked to him about how that series pays homage to classic film noir genre while giving audiences something fresh. And as a self-proclaimed geek, Simon also shares what he is looking forward to next with the X-Men, I think on the live action capacity. So go check out that interview as well as all of our interviews, both here on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. Subscribe, leave a review. It helps us so much. We're going to have more Watch Club coming soon with episode 14 dropping shortly after episode 14 of the show drops on Disney Plus next week. Megan, Darcy, and Justin, thank you so much for joining me for this Watch Club. And as we say,
good soldiers follow orders.